Hey, movie fans, welcome back to Popcorn Talks, Anatomy of a Movie, where today we are going to talk about us. Not us, like the panel us, but the movie us. We're going to break it down for you, but us. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Anatomy of a Movie.
Hey, and we're back for yet another Popcorn Talk Network's Anatomy of a Movie, where today, it's a big to-do is happening. We are going to talk about the mega movie, horror movie, creepy movie. We'll figure it all out, but we are going to talk a lot about us today. So we know that I've actually had this requested, or we're going to talk about this movie, and I said, yes, we are. And look, we're making it happen because it was requested from our audience, kind audience. We're here to talk about us. Hey, and welcome, Marissa Serafini.
Hello,
How
everyone.
How are you? Red?
I'm good, yes. Or am I really the Marissa Serafini?
I don't know. Don't creep me out already.
I don't know.
And welcome back.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm good I'm tethered to Marissa right here.
I'm sorry for the both of you.
Right.
And I'm sorry for whoever's tethered to me. And we will get into what tethering and tethered is and us and all this. The big Jordan Peele movie, his follow-up to Get Out. This week... above and beyond all other weeks, this mention is quite important. We always spoil a movie. We break a movie down via plot points, and this movie does have twists. There are things in regards to the storytelling that many would consider as being spoilers. So, if you have not seen us... and you should always tune into us. But if you haven't seen the movie Us, tune out, because I think the movie...
Pause,
yeah.
Just go watch the movie.
Yeah.
Unpause.
And I really do think that the movie is better served the less you know about it. But not according to the Universal marketing execs. We will talk about that later. But yes, and if you have seen the movie, well, welcome. We will talk about all those plot points and try to get a better sense and feeling as to what the hell Us was all about. So, without further ado, you've been fairly warned, and now we're going to just... we start off as every show, our opinions. Marissa, we're going to start off on to my far right, which would be stage left.
Right.
Marissa, what did you think
okay.
of us?
Okay, so, you know, I do not do horror or scary or... any of that matter.
No, you don't.
So I went in and I'm like, oh, God, here we go. The first half an hour, legitimately creepy. And I'm like, and they were pretty earned. And then, like, once I started figuring out what was happening, I was like, okay, now that I've seen them, quote unquote, us, once I saw them, I was like, okay, they're not as scary looking. And then I went, and then I was like pretty in for the rest of it. But I had to get through the first half an hour, 40 minutes to get through all the scary parts. And then, so the first part was like, what? And then the second part was like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
So, but overall, it was a fun ride. Not gonna lie.
And I can tell you, I've been to horror movies with Marissa. Not a lot, because she's not into that sort of thing.
Not
and,
many.
And it's a movie with a show. That's all I can say.
I am the show.
Yeah, she is quite the show. It's quite entertaining. I'm glad you stuck it through.
There was one point where I audibly did say it out loud, and I remember, oh, hell nah. I said that out loud. I don't remember what exact part, but I just remember saying, oh, hell nah. Here we go.
Nice.
But overall... fun. Cool. And it's very thought-provoking at the end, so I think Jordan Peele did a good job with that, where it leaves the audience just thinking at the end.
Mina, what did you think?
God, I'm like Marissa in the sense that I don't do horror, but ironically, I do thrillers, which you would think is very similar, but there's something about a thriller that I can deal with, but this was both. This was both horror and thriller. I loved Us. I thought it was brilliantly done. I kept, like, thinking, how is this going to size up? Or, like, you know, how is this going to replicate the magic that we saw with Get Out? And right. I think something Jordan Peele does so exceptionally well is the fact that there is always social commentary there. And the best thing that I got out of this entire movie overall was what it had to say about upward mobility and class, and how, you know, as Jordan Peele said in one of his interviews, sometimes you are the monster and you don't even know that you are the monster.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, there's lots to unpack here. My first knee-jerk reaction was, well, there was a couple. But my first knee-jerk reaction was, A, this isn't the... A lot of people came out saying this is the scariest movie I've seen. No. It's creepy. Jordan Peele brings out the creeps and freaks for sure. And where I do believe that in horror, creepiness and scares are hand in hand, but they're also separate entities. Mm-hmm. There can be a difference between a scary movie and a creepy movie. This, to me, was a very creepy movie. There were some scenes that were quite very uncomfortable to sit through.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't necessarily make it a scary movie. Poltergeist is a scary movie, where this was like really, it was creepy. I didn't find it. A Quiet Place. And this is a good comparison because both of these movies came out of South by Southwest with great, great buildup and word of mouth and buzz. Quiet Place to me is a scary movie. Where again, I think Us was just very creepy. Yeah, there were times where it could get uncomfortable, but the tethered were creepy characters. Mm-hmm. Jordan Peele, I think, to his credit, made a very different movie from Get Out. If you were going in expecting Get Out, you weren't getting Get Out. You might have been disappointed. I walked out of the theater, and I was truly befuddled. In fact, one of the first people I saw was a colleague, Simon Thompson, from Meet the Movie Press, and he asked me, what did you think of the movie? And I said to him, I don't know what the hell I just watched. I'm still trying to figure out what the hell I just watched. I didn't say how, but, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, because I think in Us, there's a lot to unpack. I do think that the first half of the movie was really strong. I felt that the third act, for me, the third act kind of blew it. It didn't stay on its toes. And I think it became a
danced
little...
Danced on its toes?
It couldn't stay on its toes, but danced on its toes. It didn't land the pirouette. Let's just say that. So I felt that there was too much trying to be done, too much trying to be told. And in that, a lot of the message was lost. It became a little confusing, and it became a little... What the hell?
Exactly. The first part was what, and then the second part was what the hell.
There you go.
That's exactly how I broke it down with you.
That's probably basically what they could have called the movie. What? What the hell?
Yeah.
And look, I think that I think it's great that a movie could charge so much discussion. Everybody wanted to talk about this movie. We're going to get into audience reaction more. And I think in a sense, too, there was some people just didn't like the movie. Other people's like praised the movie. Mm-hmm. I'm somewhere in the middle. I did like the movie. I respect what Jordan Peele as a filmmaker and writer accomplished, because he was breaking a glass. He was breaking the glass ceiling, making the horror genre different. He made something different. This was no sophomore slump for him. He didn't just remake Get Out, but he did and tried to do something different. That I applaud. And he didn't necessarily fail at it. Box office numbers would say he didn't fail. But I think from an artistic standpoint, he by no means failed. And if anything, like Get Out, I think the movie really begs of discussion that we'll have right here. And I think a lot of our audience, you know, many people were asking me, what did you think? And I wanted to try to save it for here because it's hard. It, for me anyways, it really is difficult. It took me a long time to unpack.
Right.
And that was a good thing because it stayed with me throughout the week. I started at the beginning of the week And Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I was still thinking about the movie,
yeah,
which is a good sign, and not in a bad way. Like, it didn't make me angry.
It's thought-provoking. It begs a lot of questions at the end, where you really only really figure it out until you discuss it with other people.
Yeah, and I'm not even, for me anyways, I've discussed, I still don't have, there's no clear definition on the end. So, let's start talking a little bit about, his Jordan Peele's inspiration, let's say. This is something that he had thought about, with Get Out being a big hit, all doors open for him. Us was going to be his next movie. I think that he also, he loves the doppelganger.
Yeah, fear of the doppelganger.
Right. He was making this in the midst of Get Out was already being completed and finished, but it hadn't had the success that it did now. And so he was already working on this, and it's really stemmed from what he says. The idea for this movie came from a deep-seated fear of doppelgangers.
Mm-hmm.
And, I know a lot of people have fun with doppelgangers, and there's always, the plot twist of, evil twins. But it's what if there really were evil twins coming at you? And just that innate fear that all of us have. Mm-hmm. And, how do you put that into a film? And so that was the genesis of
this. I was so surprised by that, because when I was listening to interviews, he said that when he was a child, he just had this fear that he would be on the subway one day and that he would see himself staring back at him. And when I was a kid, I used to always think, if there was only a twin out there that looked like me, that would be so cool. It was never something that was creepy or eerie. So,
well, yeah, I'm Asian, we all look alike, so.
Isn't that nice? You could say that. If I said it, I'd be racist. But yeah, and I'd be afraid, because if there was a doppelganger of me, I'd just be, buddy, I'm sorry. But in any case, yeah, I mean, the doppelganger story is one that science fiction really adores.
Yeah.
It's a major trope. I mean, Star Trek has used it in the classic.
We always see twins.
Always.
Yeah. He got it from The Twilight Zone, he said. He said he was inspired by a specific episode of it.
I love the movie Twins, too, even though it's not a doppelganger movie. But
I always had a fascination with twins. I mean, my favorite movie of all time is The Parent Trap.
Yeah. So. Me too. That's so crazy.
I mean, I've always had a fascination.
It's funny. I have close friends that are twins. I have close friends that are twins. And, when I think about it, they are almost tethered. And they're the only ones that can crack the facial recognition on an iPhone. So if somebody had an iPhone, if one of them had an iPhone 10, the twin could actually. That's
open
the one
it?
Thing it can't oh yeah, do is that. So. Those damn tethered. But in any case, so Jordan Peele, this fascination for him was his inspiration to write this. And as you pointed out earlier, too, there is this socio-political themes that he could incorporate in this above and beyond just race.
Yeah.
And I think this is where some people... Where this schism is, when you see Get Out is a singular story. There are many themes that you can talk about, but it really is this self-contained singular story, and where Us, you can look at it as singular, absolutely, but there's so much in it.
Also, it could lead to another film.
It could.
Not that I want a franchise out of this movie.
Yeah.
He joked around, he's like,
if Universal offers him $100 million, he's totally doing his sequel.
Sure. Yeah.
Right.
Well, it could lead to another.
Yeah, well, we will talk about that. The other thing that this movie had is, for horror aficionados or the lover of the horror genre, there was just a crap load of Easter eggs.
Yes.
Everything from Joel Schumacher's The Lost Boys too. Now, the funny thing is, I called the movie HUD, taken from just shortening Not it Chud. From Chud. There's a movie called Chud, which is Cannibalistic Humanoid Underground Dwellers. This is HUD. It takes out the cannibalistic aspect of that B-movie. And that's basically what this is that I was thinking about. But, you know, like I said, Lost Boys. He uses Twilight Zone reference. There's definitely Jaws Thriller. In there. Thriller is in there. There's a lot of horror type references that Peele put in, I think. Well, in part because his love of horror. And you can tell that he loves the genre, I think, as a director. He knows the tropes, knows how to move the camera really well.
Yeah.
And at least build a suspense with the creepiness.
Right, so. And he used the same cinematographer that did It Follows.
Right.
And if you ever watch that film and how the camera moves and follows from people to people, or place to place, you know, he had the same movie in this movie.
And he actually used It Follows. He told his cast to watch. It Follows was one of the movies he told, like, Lupita Nyong'o to definitely go out and see, because that was somewhat of an inspiration for how, you know, the tethered were going to be in this movie. And if he saw It Follows, about this evil entity that would follow you, there are similarities there. So It Follows is definitely an Easter egg inspiration for him. So, again, what did you find, folks, feel about, like, what Easter eggs did you find, folks, find? See.
I think it's not so much an Easter egg, but the whole Hands Across America.
Yeah.
And I found it very generational because, granted, I'm young. I wasn't around in the 80s, but I know what Hands Across America was for. And then, but when you actually apply it to how that was a failed project, and then when you apply it to now in the movie, you also might think now this is going to be a failed project statement too. Mm-hmm. So, and I liked how he used just the symbolism of what the statement that he was trying to go for, but it ended up not going as well as they hoped.
Right.
Yeah, and that was also in 1987, I believe, and during the Reagan era, and
is it 86?
I thought it was 86.
Or 86.
I was there.
But I guess I think the parallel he was trying to draw, my interpretation was, okay, you're tying the Reagan era to the Trump era, and Trump has been compared to Reagan in the way that, and like how he talks about like people of color or what he's trying to do, without like getting too much into politics, like what he's trying to do here in America by making America great again. So I thought that was an interesting parallel, because this is like one of the first movies to come out during the Trump era, kind of criticizing the way things are right now.
Especially, you didn't see Black Klansman?
Yeah, totally.
Oh, no, I mean, like, and I get what you're saying. And, yeah. And again, without political, well, again, it's hard not to, the social political implications in Us and in Get Out, for that matter.
Yeah.
They're there. Mm-hmm. Like, it's to not address, I think, would be a great disservice, and we wouldn't be doing our jobs. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, comparing Reagan to Trump, okay, that's one thing if you want, but, I mean, the red, to me anyways, there wasn't a mistake that the Tethered were wearing red. It wasn't a mistake that the Tethered were not only wearing red, but they were yelling a lot, and they couldn't talk.
Yeah,
really.
And
wanted a bully
because he was taking a different perspective, where he even said this in interviews, like, he has a certain political stance, but you kind of need to look at yourself at times and say, like, how are you contributing to the schism? Mm-hmm. How are you contributing to, like, this culture of hate and divisiveness by always thinking, like, in this way that, oh, like, I'm right, you're not right. Like, people who say, you know, like, regardless of political affiliation, the people who are, like, constantly saying, oh, you're a Trump supporter, oh, you're not a Trump supporter, like, it's kind of about looking at ourselves, too, and,
well,
you know.
See, I didn't even really see the political aspect of it. I saw it for more just the symbolism of red, evil.
Yeah.
Sure.
And danger.
Mm-hmm.
And death.
Definitely.
And so I took it literally just at face value. It's like,
right.
Okay. And it's such a, red is such a distinguished color, mm-hmm. where it looks so different compared to the normal humans that we see.
Oh, absolutely.
And so it just visually gave us something different that we know, hey, that's something to visually give us a warning to something to look out for. So the Tethered, we know we could separate and delineate that they're the evil ones.
Yeah, and at the same time, again, you know, I had a conversation about this movie just last night, too. You know, I think it's obvious. The other obvious takeaway that one could look at it this way. And again, to the panel here, to the folks who are listening, none of our, you know, these are opinions and things that well, they are that. These are takeaways that we may have come away with, that we may have read about, that Jordan Peele had said. Mm-hmm. You have your opinions, your takeaways, too. They're equally as valid. So we want to hear about them. I think it is, like, this is one of the strengths of movie making, I think, that a movie can have this kind of a discussion. Because the other takeaway, too, is that, you know, when you watch a movie like us, we are our own enemy, mm-hmm. you know, our mirror version of ourselves, or, you know, we are the evil within.
Yeah.
So that's one takeaway. Another takeaway, this was brought up yesterday, and I didn't think of it this way, but, you know, whenever there's any success, somebody has to fail. Somebody gets crunched on, and no matter what the success may be.
It's relativity.
Yeah, so... You know, that's another way that the movie can be looked at. That I think is very valid to do so. And I think with the Tethered, being that they are these underground dwellers, they are the people who are topside. They're seconds who.
Yeah,
they're tethered to their counterparts.
They. You know, they seem to adhere to similar things, but they dance. They have all these things that
they don't have a voice. And
they don't have a voice.
That was both literal and figurative in the sense that these are the voiceless, but they also literally cannot speak.
Right.
They cannot speak up for themselves, and they're also completely hidden from the rest of society.
Except for one.
Outcasts. Except for one.
For Red.
Which is, and I think that very clear distinction and that twist at the end really shows us that our concepts and notions of good and evil are inherently subjective, and that, you know, we might think something is evil or we might think something is good without realizing the perspective of evil or the perspective of good. And also what I thought was the thing that stood out to me the most was the fact that you can have upward mobility and come out of that system and be the only person who comes out of it. And it's kind of like a commentary on how people who rise up from their situation kind of want to distance themselves from where they came from.
It's a nature versus nurture argument as well.
Yes, that as well.
And again,
you can adapt.
Because it took, well, it's interesting because, again, you know, taking as long as I took to think about the movie, of course, I bring everything back to Star Trek, and I talked about, and I thought about Star Trek Nemesis, which had to deal with a clone of a very well-respected, high-level captain of a flagship starship, and his clone, who did not live that life. And when the prestige person is talking to this, going, you know, you have my DNA in you, you could be like me. And he's like, no. He goes, yeah, and you have my DNA in you as well, and you didn't live my life. He goes, my life was filled with brutality and hatred. This is what begets from that, where you had a completely different life. We are the same person, but we are different. And we're, and I felt that theme come right out of this movie as well, as we are the same person, but through the twist, we learned that through the nurture in the society that person who is from underground could have a better life. Mm-hmm. And the switcheroo that happens, which is the twist, that person didn't have the good life at all. Almost lost her voice.
Right.
In fact, so that's another
way. But she still
had
a voice.
She still had a voice.
And that's the thing that, like, made me question. I was like, how the hell can she talk? She's educated. She's speaking grammatically correct for someone who is supposedly, like, not educated and illiterate in that sense. And you realize when you see the rest of the Tethered family, they can't speak.
Yeah.
They're only talking and grunting and stuff, but she's the only one who's speaking in full sentences.
And that has to do, and I love that you're bringing that up.
Right. And, like, so me just thinking, I was like, how the heck can she talk and no one else can?
Access.
How is she educated in that sense.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's, like, such an important point that you just brought up. It all goes back to having access. And people don't realize this, that the playing field is never equal. So when people talk about the American dream and they say, oh, you know, everyone has the opportunity to achieve success in America, I mean, to a certain degree, yeah, but when we look at it, there is such an unequal playing field. And that's exactly what this movie shows, is that if you are part of the tethered, what are the chances that you're going to rise up? It literally took you how many years to rise up and revolt and do the Hands Across America thing? It took you that long to orchestrate it, to plan it. And we still don't know, because there's no sequel. We still don't know if it's going to be successful. And that really mirrors life for people who are voiceless here in America and around the world, is that upward mobility is so difficult. And once you break free, the chance of success, you can, still.
You can have the education, but do you have the chance to actually do something with it?
Yeah, exactly.
I want to hold off on that, because these are really great points. Let's talk about the twists. So we're just going to... Okay.
And that was so obvious.
You're dancing around it forever.
Yeah. Like, let's just talk about the twist.
Was that
already
a spoiler to you? Because I saw that coming.
A lot of people say it's...
The actual twist?
The actual twist.
That we know she was actually the evil.
She was Adeline was...
Red.
Yeah, Adeline was...
The only reason red. I didn't see it coming is because it didn't make sense to me that there would be a twist if... You know, if she had this family and if she was, like, trying to protect them from the other. That's the only reason I didn't see it coming, is because why would you be so fearful of them when... I don't know. I guess that's the only reason why I didn't see it. Because she acted as if she didn't really know who they were.
As if she had PTSD from the entire thing. Yeah,
right?
And again, I think after multiple viewings... Jordan Peele lays out the breadcrumbs for you to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Much like M. Night Shyamalan did in The Sixth Sense. Because A...
Yeah, when you go back to watch it, you're like, oh yeah, such a fool.
This
when
makes
she can't
sense.
Speak,
well,
that makes sense.
And
the smile.
And the fact that Red can speak.
Yeah, Red can speak. That was such a clear flag.
That's the clear thing. And the fact that the trailer ruined the movie and showed
I didn't watch the trailer.
The trailer shows the house of mirrors at the fun house, mm-hmm. and they show the hands coming out and dragging the little girl Adeline, and they show it. They more or less show it.
Okay.
So
I didn't think that was a giveaway.
Well, if you're watching the movie, you know, and yeah, I mean, it kind of is, because that's exactly what happens in the movie.
Yeah.
Like, she grabs her, chokes her out, and drags her across, and then she becomes... So we know what the twist is. And we were talking about upward mobility. And I think we're onto something, because you're right. This is a horror movie we're talking about here. But you're right. Sometimes it's hard. And nothing makes that more concrete than the college admissions scandal that happened recently.
Yes, you're right.
No, I mean, you know, right? So you had well-to-do, upward mobility people mm-hmm. who are well beyond their means, fine and comfortable, and yet they still had to cheat to get their, you know, their privileged kids, you know, who are already making millions being influencers into college.
And our fellow Popcorn Talk... you know, colleague Carla Renato posted a status on Facebook that I thought was so powerful, where she said, you know, here are people who aren't really being reprimanded for the college admission scandal in the same way that people of color are when they fake a home address so that they can get their schools into a better public mm-hmm. school system. And I just thought that was so powerful. And it speaks to, like, that feeling of upward mobility. And like, why are you punished for faking an address to get into a better school when public education should be an equal playing field? But with the college admissions scandal, this stuff happens more than we really know.
And I don't go want to get into the scandal part, because we're bringing it back to it. But it's more so, like, based on merit. You can have status, have money, but do you actually have merit to be where you should be?
But all of this has to do with what we were talking about, what these tethered can represent, or and as as a symbolism, as a theme. And it's one of those things that, again, it's one of those happy coincidences for a movie. You know, a movie comes out and some social thing happens that becomes big. Us comes out around the same time. It wasn't planned that way, but if you're talking about social political themes in this movie, mm-hmm. and upward mobility and keeping the person down, this is one thing. We talk nurture nature. Like, so when Adelaide is in the upper world, right?
Adelaide,
right?
Yeah.
When she's in the upper world, she learns, she goes to school, she has that better life, she is nurtured into, she starts to talk again, she uses dance as a way of communication, she meets a pretty decent guy, from the way I looked at him, right. He's a really good
basically,
guy.
Basically, she had to get re-educated, she started, for technically, with the Red, who now Adelaide, she started with no education, had to get re-educated.
Right.
Learning dance, learning how to speak, and just assimilating herself into the community.
Yeah, and my whole thing is with her character going back to Santa Cruz, she knew what was there. She didn't want any opportunity or chance for it to ever come back. She's like, I got the hell out. Mm-hmm. I am doing well. I married good. I have a family. I love my family. I don't ever want to be confronted with that again, because that scarred me for life.
Right. Also, like, you want to disassociate.
Right.
Now that you have status and class and wealth, you're kind of disassociating yourself from where you came from because you don't want that life anymore. Right. And I think in some ways that is problematic. Not that you owe it to where you came from all the time, that you have to always pay back. But the way I see it is, you know, I think it's great when you can rise up from a situation but also give back to that same community. And it's something that we see happen time and time again, where people distance themselves.
She just wanted out. And I get it.
Understandable.
And as a 11, 12-year-old girl, I forget how young she was in 1986, but this is her opportunity. Her tethered came to her, and it's like, that's it. Switcheroo.
Yeah.
I'm the evil twin that's going to make good. And then, again, these are all things you think about after you see the movie.
Yeah, like,
I saw
that, and, like, what I thought was, like, somewhere out there, there's a Mina just like me who doesn't have the same opportunities. No, seriously. Like, when I think about it, I think about, wow, I'm so lucky. I'm first-generation American. Both my parents are from Iraq. They got out at the perfect time, like, during the Saddam regime. Imagine if they didn't. Imagine if I was still in Iraq, especially when, you know, Iraq was invaded and the country was destabilized. Like, there's always another us out there that was never given the same opportunities as us. And to recognize that privilege is so important, to not just say, oh, work hard, but to also recognize, no, we also do have privilege to a certain extent. And that's why we are where we are today, is we're successful. A huge part because of that birth lottery.
Yeah, and at the same, time we can become our own enemies. So, I want to go back to Easter eggs. We'll get off social political for a little bit. So, you know, I already mentioned Chud. We already mentioned The Lost Boy, Santa Cruz, The Carousel. But another movie that was an Easter egg and reference The Goonies. One of my favorite movies.
And also Thriller.
Of course. We talked about Hands Across America.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to get on this for 2 seconds, and we'll stop. So yes, it was a Phil thing. I remember Hands Across America and everybody lining up. But I think this is one of my biggest... I think this is one of my problems with the end of this movie is... I just couldn't find the relevance because we see them on the mountaintops, all hands, the helicopters are there, and then it fades to black. And I was like, okay, what now?
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Whoa.
Us
okay.
too.
What?
Or them.
Yeah, I was like, right? them. I was like okay.
But again, it leaves it open-ended because if people don't
totally.
Know the results of Hands Across America, you should definitely read our rundown, which is in the link that will be provided below. Hands Across America, it was a charity event where they were raising money for the homeless. They spent more money on the promotions than they end up making.
Right.
So at the end of the event, they only made about $15 million. That was supposed to end hunger, but obviously $15 million can't do that.
Yeah.
I'll take it. It ended my hunger.
Yeah. So in that sense, financially, it was a fail. And that's why... But the thing is, if you remember, because this is 1986, and the young, real Adelaide at that point, she didn't see the outcome of Hands Across America. So by the time she got tethered underground, she didn't know that it was a failed experiment. So she spent her entire life planning this thing and not knowing it was going to be failed at the end of it.
Yeah.
Thinking it's actually going to be successful.
That's really interesting.
And the way that I looked upon Hands Across America, too, is, you know, there was a ton of coordination to make it happen. You know, right. From a money perspective, didn't make as much. But the coordinated effort and the amount of people that were involved, to me, that was a success. Because the publicity put onto it. So I kind of like, this is the thing in the 80s. These kind of things like sort of happened. Hands Across America. We talked about from Bohemian Rhapsody.
Live Aid.
The Live Aid concert. There are all these big things going on that the media, whether it be MTV, the news, could cover from a worldwide perspective. So seeing people line up and holding hands or being connected by music through all you know, through different venues. These were an important staple of things. These were, and they were highly, extremely difficult to coordinate and get together because the technology isn't what it is today. Mm-hmm. So that was a main staple of events that took place. Mm-hmm. Farm Aid comes out of like the 80s as well. And those were big music acts back then. So it's really interesting that the movie starts off, for me anyways, it's interesting that the movie starts off in the 80s. And you're right. I mean, the Hands Across America, the hype around it and getting people to do it. And you're right, that Adelaide was on the cusp of the date happening, and it didn't do it.
She didn't see the end result.
Yeah, that's interesting, because that's something else I didn't think of.
But again, it's also something like, if you weren't from that time and didn't know the end result, the ending of the movie would be totally wasted on you.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
In fairness, I didn't understand the end of the movie until after the fact, and I did my research. I was like, oh, okay. So, again, it does leave the ending of the movie open-ended, where you're questioning what happens now. Did it actually succeed? Did they get their message across and killed everyone in America, and now they're the ones who are the dominant ones above the ground? We don't know, because it just fades to black.
Right.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. Or can they coexist?
Yeah. So, now, another interesting Easter egg that I had to look up, I'm looking at it right now. I didn't know if you had picked up on, I mean, I picked up on it, but I just didn't know what the passage of the verse was. Jeremiah
11:11.
Yeah. Bible verse.
Right.
Mina actually has it.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
Therefore, this is what the Lord says. I will bring on them a disaster they cannot escape. Although they cry out to me, I will not listen to them.
Right.
So it's the apocalypse.
Yeah, it's pretty much God warning.
Yeah.
Because it's in the book of Jeremiah, back in the Old Testament. It's about the people of Israel, that he was about to bring evil upon the people of Israel, upon those who weren't going to worship God. But if they did, he would protect them. But if they didn't, he was going to bring evil upon them. And he gave that warning. And he is pretty much to break it down and be like, I'm going to bring evil upon you if you don't worship me. You're going to have hell to pay for, and I'm going to hear your pain, but I'm not going to help you.
Right.
That's basically it.
Yeah. So, and I do read for the folks who've been watching us for like 100 years, Marissa is our resident
Catholic.
I have read the Bible.
I'm Catholic.
But since day one.
I have legitimately read the Bible from beginning to end.
And since day one, our very first podcast was Pacific Rim. And that's where she brought up various symbolisms. And then from that day on, it was done. So shall it, so shall it be written, so shall it be said, or so, yeah.
Phil usually tosses the religion, the religious aspects to me. Oh, yeah, I
always
do, too.
Always find it. But you know, well, let's talk about the number 11.
You probably loved Mother, then.
Oh, God, like, yeah. I went in on that film, that but like, we digress.
Yeah.
But basically, so, it is the warning, the forewarning in the movie that, like, there is going to be hell to pay.
Right. Now 11.
Hell is coming.
Now, 11, too, is also heavily featured in the movie.
Yeah.
So, aside from the 11-11, thriller.
It's the pairings, too.
Is the thriller shirt the number of the prize? 11. Mm-hmm. Surely their double show up. Gabe settles in to watch the Giants game that's tied 11-11 in the seventh inning. Jason points out that the time is 11-11. Now, it's funny that's what I always, it was make a wish during a tender bedtime scene. And when the tethered version of the sign carrying homeless man shows up at the end of the movie, he simply has four ones gouged into his forehead, underscoring that the verse is above everything else. Four ones in a row is seen in the film's more haunting promo.
And there's four of them.
Yeah, 11-11.
Yeah.
11-11. So which is very interesting. The fact of...
Were there 11 different moments of the number 11 throughout the movie?
Did anybody count the ones that I just brought up?
11 instances, 11 moments of the number 11.
I feel like you totally would do
that. And probably. The movie does hinge on, like, coincidence. Tethered, the frisbee falling on,
right,
like
on
a twister.
The blue thing dot.
Everything is about tethered. Duality in this movie. Like,
right.
The whole thing,
right.
Good versus evil. And then also, like, the devil versus God. And the scene that stood out to me the most out of everything was, remember the scene where the little boy is going into the fire? The evil little boy, quote-unquote evil little boy. And then the other one is kind of leading him astray.
Right.
I saw that as such a, you know, as a very symbolic, you know, there's the Christ and then the Antichrist. And the reason I say the little boy who's pure is the Christ figure was because his hands were literally out like this,
crucifix.
As if he was being crucified.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's literally what happens to him, is that he sacrifices himself to save his family unknowingly, but he still sacrifices himself and leads the devil into the fire where he burns. So I just... Oh, Jordan Peele's a freaking genius. Like, I can't even get over this movie.
There's a lot of religious undertones that you wouldn't think of.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Another Easter egg is the movie Jaws, something that's near and dear to my heart, that movie. You know, a lot of the beach scenes were filmed very similarly to how Spielberg filmed some of his beach scenes, especially particularly when little Alex Kintner gets taken. There's a scene, where Adelaide gazes off watching the various happenings on the beach. And she's tuning out conversation. That's really taken from, almost Jaws. Shot for shot, taken from Jaws. And then another really one of my, an unsung movie, Something Wicked This Way Comes. It's a Ray Bradbury story turned into a really good movie that I believe Disney may have put out, believe it or not. But this has the pandemonium shadow show. There's a mirror maze, things like that. Rabbits. Yeah,
I
of course.
So many pieces of symbolism with the rabbits. There's so many ways to interpret
that.
Well,
it was a reference to The Favorite. No?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I kept thinking,
oh my gosh. I was literally
another
thinking
movie.
That.
Another movie
That's
with
so
rabbits.
So funny.
But just the whole symbolism of rabbits and just how easily they multiply.
Right.
The duplicates of that.
I saw it as them also kind of being this. Like, Jordan Peele says it's because he's always been terrified by rabbits and he just thinks they're creepy.
Really?
But the way I saw it that rabbits are so cute and they're innocent and they're pure, but here they are underground, kind of representing that, like, something so pure and so innocent could be trapped and not see the light of day. But what I also gathered from it is we see rabbits right as, not Adelaide, but we think she's Adelaide, when Red is going down the maze. And I literally saw it as going down the rabbit hole and kind of being lost in this maze where you never can get out. And additionally, finally, the whole concept of magic and pulling a rabbit out of a hat.
Sure.
So there was like, rabbits were the perfect motif in this film. I thought did such a great job using them, especially showing them locked in cages at the beginning. Opening scene. So brilliant.
And just the whole mention that the clones, quote unquote, had to eat rabbits just to survive.
Yeah.
Like, that's
to eat something so innocent and pure.
Exactly.
Oh, and Chud, cursed. Cannibalistic.
Yeah, but they're not, like, they weren't eating people. Eating they were rabbits. Eating rabbits.
But the rabbits represent
regular humans.
And the rabbits could multiply, so it was basically self-multiplying food. Mm-hmm. It was a food source that wouldn't run out unless they ate the male and female rabbit that started it all.
But there were so many rabbits down there.
So many rabbits.
They were fine.
So another.
See, that's the mentality that we don't care because there's so many that they're dispensable.
Well, I care about.
We don't care
I don't
about
think,
the ones that are underneath. Like,
again, I'm in red. Rabbits. So
there you go.
Am I good?
Yeah, what
am
are
I
you
evil?
Thinking? Oh, what no, are you thinking? So another one of my favorite techniques that Jordan Peele used in this movie, as well as Mike Flanagan. Who just did House on Haunted Hill, but he used it in his Ouija sequel. He does a reference to a great film director, Brian De Palma, who in many, it was his signature move. He used something called a split diopter, meaning he could have somebody in the foreground and in the background, and they would be totally in, and they would remain in focus. Both of them equally as sharp and focused, and it's a special lens that gets put into the camera. That De Palma used this in movies such as Carrie, Dressed to Kill, and most of his movies. Jordan Peele pulls that out. He used it in this movie, showing both Lupita Nyong'o's characters in the same sharp focus, even though one's in the foreground, one's in the background. It's a great technique. I always loved it. I do always think of Brian De Palma when I see other people using it. So that was a nice little nod. And then, of course, the Twilight Zone. He's referenced that. I mean, Jordan Peele loves horror. We know that. But he's also a great... he learned well. He took from classic great directors. He incorporates this into his movies, but he makes it his own. And I think that's part of his strength, that he has a good grounding. Another thing that shows up in this movie, part of Peele's background, is comedy, which I think really, in many cases, I think laughter and comedy... they kind of also go hand in hand in horror as well. It's a great way to break up the tension, so to speak, when placed. And this movie, through the husband especially, I thought he was great.
I thought he was great too. But playing on what you just said right now, that's exactly what Jordan Peele said, was that he thought that humor and horror goes hand in hand in the sense that they both play on absurdity, but he said what he tried to do is, how do you ground that absurdity as much as possible?
Right.
So with horror, how do you ground the absurdity? And with comedy, how do you make it as grounded as possible?
Right.
And I thought the, what's his name? What's the main character's name?
Adelaide?
The man.
Or Red?
Yes. Red. I thought he was so funny. Like, there were so many moments of levity. Where he was like, what is this weird performance art? And he would just... I laughed so much in this movie. Yeah. I was not expecting to laugh this much during a horror movie. I laughed a lot.
Yeah, no, it had some good laughs. And again, I think that comedy or laughter in horror is used... It does break up the tension.
Even the communication when they're like...
Yeah, no,
I just thought it was funny.
Yeah, I mean, again... Even in your slasher movies, there's some sort of, like, after the teenagers have escaped, somebody says some sort of a line. It just breaks the tension before ramping things back up again to where we're going to have horror. So it grounds an audience, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because sometimes you can be in extremely intense movies that just don't let you go. And by the time you're done with the movie, you're exhausted. I mean, just exhausted. A movie called Sorcerer, I think, is a really great example of tension grabbing, and there's little humor in the movie, but I don't mind horror and comedy. Sometimes it doesn't work, but Jordan Peele obviously has, he's able to walk that fine line and juggle it. And then on top of that, he adds his layers of social, political, you know, commentary. So I think that's a strength of Us. Let's talk a little bit about its reception here in the States. First off, I think it's really important to note that the budget of the movie is about $20 million, which is incredible when you think
about
it. So
much higher than Get Out, which was, what, $5
million? Yeah, it could have been. But $20 million is still, by today's standards, it's pretty low. So all in, it probably would have cost them with prints and advertising or hard drives and advertising. I'm going to estimate that Universal threw in around 30 extra million, maybe more, maybe less, but around 50. So 50 all in, right? And we've got, and we're looking at thus far for domestic box office, that's right here in the good old U.S., $90 million within its first week. Not too shabby at all. It far over-indexed what prognosticators had it coming in its opening weekend, which was $71 million opening weekend on almost 4,000 locations. So people had it coming in at 50-55. They're like about $20 million off. Right. So, and then it's opened up worldwide. So, foreign territories, $23 million. So, thus far, $113 million plus in the box office. Not too bad. The interesting thing is, at least I find, is critics and audiences. Critics and audiences. So, this movie has done for Rotten Tomatoes. Not too shabby. I mean, 94% is pretty good. That's like right around mid-90s. The cinema score in this movie, and here's where I'm not surprised, is a B. It's a B. Right. I think the movie, again, we talked about this a little bit. I think perception on this movie, people have either loved it or they walked out not wanting to take the time to maybe think about it. Maybe they just didn't care. They walked out going, what the F did I just watch?
Right, not completely understanding it. Yeah. I mean, I watched it not understanding it until I did research afterwards. I'm like,
I was processing it. I was processing everything as I was going along, but I also was surprised at, like, subverted expectations, because I went into it thinking that there would be some grand commentary about race, but it was more about privilege and class and upward mobility. And I literally thought, because my best friend was, like, whispering things in my ear, she's like, I bet you what's going to happen when the black family is, like, killing the white family, that this is when the police are going to come in, and it's going to be some sort of commentary on how police never come or never respond right away when it's a person of color, and how they respond faster when it's, like, a white family, and that they're going to hear F the police playing in the background, and that people are just going to come in, and it's going to be a commentary. Yeah, we did. Yeah. And then, and then it's going to be that. And I was thinking, oh my God, I hope it's not that. That's crazy. Is it just going to end there? And then it ended up being something entirely different. Yeah. And that's what I love, is that here we have, you know, a black family playing the lead. And we're not just thinking like, oh, this is going to be about a black family. We're like, oh, this is about something entirely different, which is the best way to do diversity, is to, like, you know, realize to me, that it's more than just about race. This is about something else.
Class.
And for me, the best way to do something about diversity is when you just don't care what the family
is. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like you begin to forget that.
Yeah, you know, and our cast of characters were fantastic. Another thing, and I brought this up earlier on Meet the Movie Press, where I think, and again, I think it's a true positive of the movie, is there really aren't any blockbuster stars in the movie. Like, Lupita Nyong'o is probably the biggest name in this movie, right?
Right.
Her cast of characters around her, some of them are known, but they're not necessarily people that you would think is bringing in huge, huge box office. So, to me, what Jordan Peele has said, and said, what it's a great example of, we have good... I've delivered a story. People are coming to this movie because of marketing story. They're not being dragged in because of necessarily star power.
Right, and Get Out did so well that people want to see a follow-up to
it. So when does the legend of Jordan Peele you know, the power of Jordan Peele bringing in diverse audiences all over, I think it's really interesting. I found it also interesting that it is the second highest opening weekend grossing live action original movie in 9 years since Avatar. It's taken
That's
9 years.
Specific.
Well, yeah, it's taken 9 years, 9 years for a movie to crack like $40 million. I think Avatar opened at $47 million, mm-hmm. And then became the highest grossing movie of all time, period.
Mm-hmm.
It
Still.
Took 9 years for there to be, like, I never even thought of it that way. And there have been original movies that come out. I just found that to be an interesting stat. So we have that. I don't
Do
know.
Do you think Jordan Peele will get another nomination for original screenplay?
For horror, though?
I don't know.
He won for Get Out?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Again, I don't think this is as strong a movie as Get Out. What is again, I like this movie. It's flawed, and I don't know. That'll be really interesting for sure. I would not be upset if Lupita Nyong'o gets nominated for actress. I thought
she was great,
phenomenal.
Playing two roles is so hard, especially when one of them is something.
The entire family.
The entire family. Even the kids. I'm more afraid of the kids. Mm-hmm. Not gonna lie.
Yeah.
Especially the little boy.
Oh, I thought the girl.
The animal.
I thought
the girl. The girl. The way she looked at you.
Yeah. Girl was.
No, thank you.
Yeah.
But like honestly, I was more terrified of the kids and what they could do.
Yeah. I listen. I really love the entire cast, but Lupita really stuck out. This woman is a chameleon. Like, she can do, I mean, think about what she did in this movie alone, mm-hmm. and what she did for her voice as being Red. I mean, this is creep factor, like, warp 10. It was crazy. And she was good. I wouldn't be surprised if she were, you know, I would be more surprised if she was forgotten, because I think it's that strong of a performance from her, mm-hmm. and I really think it carries the movie.
And she said, I guess when she auditioned with Jordan Peele, she told him that she watched Get Out 6 times, and he knew, like, oh, I really want her. Like, yeah. I want Lupita Nyong'o.
Yeah.
So I love, like, you know, I guess there's been, like, he said something controversial where he said, it's not that I don't like white people, it's just I've seen that story. I'm not going to have, like, a white lead when I've already seen that story. But right. I love what he's doing for diversity and just telling, like, these stories that, it's almost like nightmarish scenes, but with social commentary. And who else knows how to do something like that that well?
Like right now?
Yeah, I can't really think of anyone in that same vein. It's such a specific genre.
Well, the thing his movie does is that there are universal themes in his movie that are still relevant. Granted,
yes.
This movie takes place, quote-unquote, in 1986, and it comes back to the modern day.
Right.
But the problems and the social aspects are still relevant.
Absolutely.
Over the course of 30 years, and they're still applicable to today. So I think that's what he does well,
right.
that he takes the universal themes that are still relevant.
Right. And
so much symbolism.
But I've mentioned this before, too, though, about horror movies in general. Horror movies, and science fiction in particular, though, but horror movies can be a reflection of society. They're an outcropping of something. And I've talked about this ad nauseum, if you've heard me talk about the original Halloween, as to what that is, an outcropping of, you know, coming out of war, coming out of all this conflict, and not seeing evil for what it is, or not even looking for it. Horror can do that. Horror throughout the ages has. What Jordan Peele has done is he's made it more overt. He's not like hiding it. He's putting it out there. He's making statements. I do think, like, look, whether or not I think this is, I don't think this is a better movie than Get Out. However, I don't think it's any less of a movie. It's a really good movie. And now I'll always be interested in what Jordan Peele has to say artistically from a movie standpoint. I'd like to know, like, if he continues to make horror, that's fine. But I'd like to see him try to do other things as well. It'll be interesting.
I like to see him do a drama.
A drama.
It'd be nice.
Or even a thriller or a mystery.
Ooh,
you know, I mean, because people have already started comparing Jordan Peele to the likes of Alfred Hitchcock.
Mm-hmm. I can see that.
Right. And I can see that, too. And Hitchcock himself directed suspense movies, horror-type movies, thrillers. You know, I could see Jordan Peele becoming. It's too early to throw that praise on him yet, but I could see him becoming that type of a director. So I always look forward to what he has to say. So, well, I don't know. I hope the folks were happy with. I mean, it's a movie that there's so much to be talked about, and I don't think anybody's either really right or necessarily really wrong.
He leaves so much of it open to interpretation.
There is, right. And
there's a rewatchability factor too.
Yes,
there is a rewatchability.
As creepy
factor.
As it is, you can rewatch it.
Yeah,
and people have that's been part of marketing, and that's been part of what people have been saying that you can go back and watch Us, and like I said earlier, The Sixth Sense, you figure out these clues as to the switcheroo, let's call it, and things become more apparent. So there is a rewatchability factor, which makes it a really good movie.
Mm-hmm.
Screenplay wise, I don't know. What are your thoughts, screenplay wise? What do you think?
I mean, I don't think so, because Get Out was just so original, and no one has seen that at all ever. So, and I think and it really hit home because too, like that movie came out at like just the right political state
right.
and climate. Where people would accept that type of film and, like, really do something about it. This film is just more the classic doppelganger, which isn't as original because we've seen doppelgangers in, like, television and other movies. And we've seen the whole theme of evil twins. That itself is not original. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I don't think so. Not for this one.
Yeah. And yourself?
I mean, I thought it was pretty original. I don't think it was as original as Get Out because the concept of putting someone else's consciousness in a black person's body, like I've never really seen that before, not in a non-comedy context.
No.
But I think what Jordan Peele did really well in this movie, additionally, I just want to add on a final note, mm-hmm. is that whole concept of finding yourself. You look into that magic funhouse and the outside of it. On the storefront or the front of the house, it says, find yourself. Mm-hmm. Right. I think it's so interesting that in order to find yourself, you have to lose yourself in the rabbit hole and, like, this place of mirrors where you're finding yourself and seeing a reflection of you. But maybe it's the less glamorous reflection of you than what appears to be.
It's what we keep down.
It's the very inner part of ourselves, the part that doesn't really surface, and you know, the part beneath us that is finally coming the surface. My other half here is coming to the surface and saying all the things.
Or is she already here?
She's here. She's dormant. It's like a volcano. She's dormant, ready to erupt at any time.
I got it controlled.
So I love that. Find yourself by losing yourself, and you might find your evil twin.
Yeah, well, it's just living among us right now, and that person doesn't want to find me. So, Marissa, where could people find you?
Everyone can follow me at Serafini TV.
Are you topside, down? Where? Do they have to look for you? All
I'm omnipresent. How about that?
And where do people? Where can people find you?
Oh,
and
that's a great God reference too. The devil. God. Who is she? Hey everyone, I'm Mina. You can find me on Instagram at Mina Makes Magic, and not just the magic you see in this movie.
And you can find me on the Twitters at DMovies1701, also here in the Popcorn Talk Network's Anatomy of a Movie, as well as Popcorn Talk Network's Meet the Movie Press, which is which is all about the hard news of the entertainment business. So tune into that on every Friday, but it's up there in, as you like to say, perpetuity.
Perpetuity.
So we always thank you for tuning in. There's going to be plenty more movies ahead. I know for one, I think we're going to be off for a few weeks. I know for one, I'm not going to be here. I'm going to be conning it. Right. So folks, I will be
we'll
at WonderCon. I'll be at WonderCon tomorrow. I'll be at CinemaCon all week and next week. So if you're an exhibitor, distributor, and you see me there, say hey. If you see me at WonderCon in Anaheim tomorrow, say hey. And then I will be at the Star Wars Celebration in Chicago.
Oh,
so
my home state.
Your home state. So you know, and that's where I'm sure you're gonna bump into me in Chicago in that grand old thing. But say hey, we will be back with many more movies to talk about. We've got the rest of the year to do it. Thank you very much to my great co-hosts, my hosts. And thank you to the audience for tuning in. We would love to see your comments and what you thought about us. All right, take care, folks.
And us.
And
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network. The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.